It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about estate planning now and ensuring assets go where you intend them after death, and how to successfully create a valid will under Wisconsin laws to avoid the probate process. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chantel Ringy is a partner at Hill Glowacki. That's a Madison law firm with practice areas in estate planning, elder law, and special needs planning. Chantel, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate.
So when a family member passes away without a will or an estate plan, and the distribution of their assets usually determined by the probate court process, why do attorneys recommend strategies for avoiding probate?
Well, I don't know that I've ever met a client who was very excited to have to petition the court. That said, our Dane County commissioners are very friendly and relatively easy to deal with in my experience. But I think there's something about the court process that adds this sort of extra layer of stress for many folks. And if they can avoid that, or if my clients can know that their loved ones can avoid that upon their passing, then generally with a bit of planning, we're able to accomplish that.
Is probate a concern only for large estates, or is it a concern at all levels?
Probate is, in Wisconsin, a court proceeding that's required when there are assets that total in value $50,000 or more that don't otherwise pass by, let's say, joint ownership. For example, if you have a joint account and it's held with survivorship with the other owner, then that will pass automatically without the need for any kind of administration. Or assets that pass automatically because you've named a beneficiary to receive it and that beneficiary survives you. But otherwise, if you have at least $50,000 of assets that don't otherwise pass that way, then Wisconsin law does require the probate proceeding.
What factors might complicate a probate case and might be frustrating for surviving family members?
Well, it does involve, by statute, the publication of notice to creditors in the paper. So there's a legal notice that's published in the state journal if the person passed away in Dane County. And heirs at law need to be notified of the proceedings. And those persons may not be beneficiaries under the will or under the they would be under the rules of intestacy, but if you have a will, it doesn't mean that you've named your heirs, but yet in a probate proceeding, those persons must be notified. So for instance, if you've named your unmarried partner or charities and excluded your heirs, nevertheless, if a probate is required, those persons need to receive a copy of the will, and they do have an opportunity to object to the proceedings. That's not always something that my clients like the idea of.
So it becomes a much more public process, as you said before.
It does. And there is an entry on the Wisconsin CCAP website. One could discern, I suppose, the size of the estate, even from the inventory fee that's paid, and that is public.
We're talking about estate planning and alternatives to probate court with a Madison attorney. Chantel Ringy is here fielding your questions and comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Chantel, a deceased family member could have a written legal will and their family could still have to go through probate to settle the estate. What might be the cause of those situations?
That's exactly right. So having a will is something that hopefully we all consider and do. It's sort of a very basic fundamental step in planning for how your assets are distributed upon your death and who is going to handle that. But having a will alone does not allow you to avoid probate necessarily. Again, the trigger would be if you have assets that don't pass automatically that total $50,000. So those are the situations in which maybe you would like to consider establishing something beyond just a basic will. If you're motivated to allow your beneficiaries to avoid the probate process, then you might consider something along the lines of a revocable trust, which is also a very common estate planning tool. And really, its sole purpose is to avoid probate of your assets upon your death. It's kind of this legal fiction, the revocable trust. It is essentially, if you direct assets to your revocable trust, perhaps during your lifetime by titling assets in the name of the trust, and also oftentimes upon your death by designating the trust as the beneficiary on beneficiary designation forms. Then those assets that are in your revocable trust upon your passing are not in your probate estate. And so, according to this, as I say, legal fiction, those assets get to avoid probate. So, that's kind of in a nutshell the structure of the revocable trust type of planning, which, as I say, is fairly simple to establish, and it's a pretty common estate planning tool. Many of my clients, once they learn of that option, are interested in pursuing it, and it's designed to avoid probate.
Then,
So having a will alone is not sufficient, unfortunately, to avoid the probate process.
and then how is a revocable trust or a living trust different from what is happening in the will?
So generally, the revocable trust will contain many of the similar provisions that you might have still in your will. They'll have the substantive provisions regarding who's to receive what upon your passing. But essentially, it is just designed to avoid probate. And I think the impetus behind the allowance to avoid probate in our statutes is just this notion that if you've done enough planning on the front end to avoid the process of probate, then our legislature feels that, okay, we can take a more hands-off approach. In the event of your death, we will allow the individual you've designated to serve as your successor trustee to administer those assets outside of the jurisdiction, the oversight of the probate court.
Let's bring on a call now, Laura in Grand Marsh. Laura, go ahead.
Yes, I'm trying to get these things settled with regards to will and trust. But what my concern right now is, I wanted to know, my husband is concerned that if I pass away, how would he handle his finances? So I wanted to set up a durable power of attorney for finances. Can I do that on my own, or do I need an attorney to do that?
Laura, thank you. And if you could step back also for a moment, Chantel, and explain what a durable power of attorney is, what this person does.
That is an excellent question, Laura. A durable power of attorney is generally regarded as something that would allow an agent to manage your financial affairs, but it only applies while you're living. That's true with regard to the healthcare power of attorney as well. So, Laura, your husband's concern with respect to what he would do if you were to pass away would not really be alleviated by your establishing a financial durable power of attorney, because again, that type of form expires, so to speak, upon your death. So having something like a will or a trust would be something you'd want to pursue. At the same time, I don't want to slight the planning that is involved in establishing powers of attorney, because those are excellent documents to have in place if you are living and you suffer an incapacity, such as dementia or a stroke or some sort of acute emergency situation. It's in that context in which the agent who's designated under your durable power of attorney for finances would have authority to do things like access your bank accounts to pay your bills, file income tax returns on your behalf, contract on your behalf, and maybe apply for Medicaid. In terms of the question, Laura, that you have, do you need to work with an attorney to establish a durable power of attorney for finances? The answer is no, you do not have to. There is a statutory form in Wisconsin for a durable power of attorney for finances. The downside of not working with an attorney and just using the state form is that if you ever do have a real long-term disabling condition, that statutory form unfortunately lacks many of the planning authorities that we rely on at Hill Glowacki, for instance, to help the agent do things like maybe qualify you for long-term care Medicaid benefits. Mm-hmm. And those additional authorities can be extremely helpful. Another type might be to include the authority to create a special needs trust on your behalf. You're not going to find those authorities in the statutory form. So while having that statutory form is better than having nothing, and it is free, you just really need a notary to notarize your signature. It's of limited value depending on your circumstances.
Chantel Ringy is a Madison-based attorney focused on estate planning and elder law, special needs planning. You can join the conversation at any point, calling in with a question, sharing your comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the set of legal documents that outline how a person's assets will be distributed upon death. And you can be part of this conversation about estate planning and how to protect and pass down assets to family members. Call in with a question, add comments along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Chantel Ringy, who is a partner at Hill Glowacki in Madison. Chantel, parents can designate guardians of their minor children in the event of their death, and people who have lost a spouse can give power of attorney to an adult child to make health care or financial decisions for the surviving parent. At what stage of life do you recommend people start the estate planning process?
Well, I think you touched on what I've always regarded as the most important time of life to establish your estate plan, or at least some form of estate planning, and that is if you have children. So in Wisconsin, the only place you can designate a successor guardian for a minor child is in your will. The same is true if you're the guardian of a special needs adult child. You can designate or nominate, I should say, it still needs to be approved by the court, but you can make that nomination within your will. And what's more important planning than trying to ensure that your child has as streamlined of a handoff as possible in the event of your unfortunate passing? So that is extremely important. The other time of another instance might be I kind of hit on it. If you have an individual who is going to be a beneficiary of your estate and they have special needs, that's another occasion in which it can be very helpful to do some planning in advance so that when they receive whatever it might be from your estate, it doesn't, for instance, jeopardize their eligibility for perhaps public benefits that they're reliant upon. And to also make sure that there's someone who is able to administer those assets for their benefit. We do prepare in those instances special needs trusts for such beneficiaries. So that's another occasion when it can be extremely helpful and important to do a bit of planning on the front end.
As you bring up these scenarios, it makes me wonder, like, is it permissible to shop around or inquire how much it will cost to set up these specific things or an estate plan? Or how do you find the expertise you need for your situation?
That's a good question. So, yes, I think it should be encouraged that consumers shop around, get an idea for is this really in the wheelhouse for the attorney who you're considering doing the planning with? What is the ballpark of their fees? And what are you getting for those fees? A good resource is the Wisconsin chapter of the National Association of Elder Law Attorneys. The vast majority of those members are very invested in estate planning as part of their practice area. And they do have a directory online that you can find with just a Google search. But there are very well qualified, many well qualified attorneys in our area who do estate planning. But certainly call around, get an idea of the cost, don't walk into it blindly. And take some recommendations from family members or friends as well, who maybe have gone through the process recently themselves.
Let's bring in Phyllis in Wausau with a question. Hi, Phyllis.
Hello.
What would you like to ask?
My question is, I have a friend who died recently with no close kin, no will, no nothing. How is that property handled? What is the process?
Those can be very difficult cases, not necessarily because of the assets that need to be administered. But for instance, I have a very similar situation in one of my client matters at the law firm now, and woman passed away and she had no relatives in the area. And the rel she did have a will, but no one really knew any of the named beneficiaries. And so sometimes that means we're hiring an heir search firm to locate people, or sometimes we at the law firm are doing quite a bit of online searching and making phone calls blindly to try to find who are the interested persons. If the person has no will, then essentially the state of Wisconsin has established an estate plan for them in our statutes, the rules of intestacy. So generally, if a person passes away with no surviving spouse and no surviving descendants, then you're looking at, do they have surviving parents? Perhaps not. If not, then you're looking at who are their surviving siblings and the descendants of any predeceased siblings. So you can imagine situations in which we're going pretty far down the chain and really trying to locate people who have no idea who the decedent is, or maybe never met him or her. So those are the cases where I really do encourage folks who have maybe charitable intentions or a very friendly neighbor who's always helped out, right? Establish an estate plan and designate who you really do want your assets to pass to, whatever it may be, large or small, because even if it's, $50,000 in your bank account, it could mean a fair amount of work for whoever is left to handle the affairs. And in the case that I have in my office right now, it's the legal guardian of the woman when she passed away who's handling the administration of the estate, just because she's a third party, just a retired attorney, but she was most familiar with the woman's affairs, and so she's the one who's kind of taking the rowing oar. They can be difficult situations.
We're discussing estate planning, all aspects of it, with Madison attorney Chantel Ringy and taking your calls. Let's go to Alicia in Little Chute. Alicia, hi. What would you like to bring up?
I have a complex situation. I have two children, a son and a daughter. And the son has been diagnosed as bipolar, seasonal affective schizophrenic, possibly. He's terrible at handling money. The other one can handle the money, and I'm not sure. I can do well, and it's kind of, I'm kind of a 50-50 person for my children, adult children, and I'm not sure how to handle his portion because if he would get it, it would be gone in a heartbeat.
Alicia, I want to toss this over to Chantel, to get your thoughts in a situation like this, Chantel.
Alicia, you're not alone in your situation and your concerns. We have many clients who have a loved one who they would ideally like to benefit in their estate plan, but their loved one has some special needs or some inability to manage funds. When that's the case, we generally recommend a special needs trust. What that would allow is for you to appoint the person or organization to manage your son's, in this instance, share of your estate after your passing. So that, as you say, he's not spending it without regard for his long-term well-being. So you have a trustee who's in charge of administering the assets for the benefit of the special needs person. The other thing that that trustee should be aware of
very quickly
is what will distributions do in the way of affecting his eligibility for things like Medicaid.
And I'm going to just jump in here, Chantel Ringy, attorney, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. When a person dies, we learn about the process to transfer their property and other assets with estate planning tools that can help avoid probate. A Wisconsin attorney fields your questions about estate planning and call in to be part of the discussion. Add your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chantel Ringy works on cases involving estate planning, elder law, and special needs planning. Chantel, once you do set up your documents and have those intentions, in those legal areas, those legal documents, how do you suggest communicating that information to loved ones or, multiple kids?
So what I typically recommend is that certainly you first make sure that whoever the persons are who you're naming as agent, to serve in various capacities in the event of your incapacity or your passing, that you talk with them first, make sure that they feel comfortable serving in that position, and ultimately that they know that they've been named. I also always recommend that clients provide a copy of their healthcare directives to their nominated healthcare agents in case they're ever called upon in the event of an emergency to make, quick healthcare decisions for you. Beyond that, our names are generally, the firm name is generally included on the documents themselves, so that if your, let's say, adult child locates your documents, and they should be told where they are. If they're in a safe deposit box at your bank, hopefully the child is named as an authorized person to access that box and they know where the keys are. Or if they're in a lockbox in your basement, hopefully they know where the key to that is or the code to get in. So let your agents know where the documents are so that they can be found if necessary, and make sure that they have a copy of your healthcare directive. So your doctor's office should also get a copy of your healthcare directive so that they know, or the emergency room knows if you end up there, who your agents are who should be contacted.
Christine emailed in to ask about a life estate. Christine established a life estate for their house and heard that the state of Wisconsin will claim part of this money if they need nursing home care in the future. And Christine's wondering how much of the value of their home would the state receive?
That is a question that I cannot answer without more information. And it really won't be discernible until their passing. And if she's married, if Christine is married, then it won't be until the passing of her and her spouse. It is correct. So a life estate, backing up, is this notion that you are transferring a future interest in your home, but you're preserving for yourself the right to live there as long as you're alive and prefer to live there. Or can live there. And so the owner has this retained interest, and it used to be that if you received long-term care Medicaid benefits during your lifetime and you had this life estate, when you passed away, the life estate interest went away, and Medicaid's estate recovery rights could not apply to that life estate interest. But I believe it was 2014 when our statutes changed in that regard. Medicaid's estate recovery rights were broadened. And one of the things that became subject to their right of recovery are life estates. And so that's correct. If you have a life estate that was established after, I believe it's August 1st of 2014, then it, and if you've received long-term care Medicaid benefits or your spouse has, then there is likely to be some claim against that interest in the event of your death. The idea being, of course, this is a publicly funded program, and the federal government, in fact, I think mandates that our state government attempt to recover what it can from assets that remain from in the beneficiary's estate when they pass.
How do survivors deal with outstanding debts left by a deceased family member, especially in the situation of too little money remains in the estate to pay down the debt?
That's a good question. So our statutes do dictate sort of an order of priority when it comes to various creditors. And as you might imagine, the government is generally at the top of that list. Mm-hmm. So things like Medicaid or tax debt, you know, those types of debts certainly do take priority over a beneficiary's right to inherit. With some exceptions, I should say, but generally speaking, that's the case. Unsecured creditors, when there isn't enough money to go around, oftentimes they don't receive anything. And so that's part of the impetus behind the requirement to file the notice to creditors in the newspaper so that creditors at large, even if you don't know about who the creditors of your loved one might be, they have an opportunity and in many cases an obligation to file a claim so that they can be identified. And if there's an opportunity with money remaining to negotiate a reduced payback, perhaps their claim could be resolved. But otherwise, there are instances when if there's no money there, there's nothing to pay the creditors. And so, unfortunately, they are not always paid.
We're talking about estate planning and the probate process with Madison attorney Chantel Ringy. You can join in with questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Valerie is with us in Madison. Valerie, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I recently responded to a mailing solicitation to attend an estate planning workshop at which a free meal at a nice restaurant would be offered. And I researched a little bit behind the firm and found out that the attorney was licensed in Illinois, not Wisconsin. So I contacted the firm, and the attorney responded saying that they wrote up documents using a Zoom call with a licensed Wisconsin attorney. So I was just wondering about the, about that whole situation.
Thanks, Valerie. Chantel, what are the implications of borderlines in a situation like that?
Well, the best advice is to have an estate planning meeting and have your estate plan drafted by and with an attorney who's licensed in the state where you reside. So maybe in that situation, there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen, it sounds like, and perhaps some of it has to do with who's better at marketing than the other. But you know, most people, I think, want to sit down with their estate planning attorney. It's during those discussions that so many important points arise. And if that attorney with whom you're having that meaningful discussion with is not licensed in the state of your residence, then they may be missing planning opportunities or other things that would jump out to someone who is. Someone who's licensed in Illinois could not prepare, for instance, a marital property agreement for someone in Wisconsin. And we often do prepare, in the context of an estate plan, a marital property agreement that can have a lot of value to the overall estate. Illinois is not a marital property state like Wisconsin is. And so there are certainly nuances in the laws between states, and it is very important that you meet with and do your planning with an attorney who's licensed where you live.
along those lines, you know, how portable is your estate plan, for instance, if you do move to another state?
Good question. So just because you've relocated to a new state does not mean that you need to toss out your old documents and have an entirely new estate plan, but that is definitely an occasion when you should plan to sit down with an attorney, blow the dust off of your old state estate plan, and determine whether there are some updates that should be made. And if it's because of Wisconsin's very unique marital property laws, there are occasions when updates are warranted, or when someone's moving to Wisconsin from another state, you know, vice versa, when updates could be made that could be helpful. So that is one of the times of life, or one of the events of life, I should say, when meeting with an estate planning attorney to discuss any recommended updates is helpful.
Sandy has emailed in to ask, what are the initial steps to follow when a spouse dies, assuming that a will or an estate plan is established?
So one of the initial steps would be to review the estate plan. And oftentimes when it's a spousal situation, so there's a surviving spouse, there is no need for an actual probate proceeding, because many times most or all assets are set up in a way that they're either held jointly with the surviving spouse, or the surviving spouse was named as the beneficiary. And it sounds like this is an occasion when there was some planning done. So hopefully that's the case. Maybe you have a trust established already. It would probably warrant picking up the phone and giving a call to the attorney who drafted, or the law firm that drafted the estate plan, to just let them know that your spouse has passed, and get some pointers in terms of maybe who to call in the way of making claims on assets, or things that could be cleaned up. But when you've done planning, hopefully it's a short list and just a matter of, as I say, making phone calls, and not necessarily the case that you're going to have to petition the probate court.
There are online tools, as you know, for writing wills and other estate planning documents. Are there risks of filling out forms through these types of online services without the help of an attorney?
I think it's great that there are online tools available. I think the goal is to help meet a need that certainly exists. And some people don't have funds to sit down with an attorney, or for whatever reason, don't choose to do that. When that's not the case, when you do have some wealth, or when you do have what you know to be a complicated situation, like our caller earlier with the beneficiary with disabilities, those are situations in which it really does add value to have that conversation with a lawyer, because unfortunately, many of the online tools are set up in a way that they're sort of one size fits all, and you're not going to get the planning that might really be helpful for your loved one. And sometimes even when you think what you need is just a simple will, what you might be getting is not exactly what you intend. I mean, there is a reason why law school is 3 years and grueling. We do learn a lot in that process.
Chantel Ringy is an attorney in Madison, works on estate planning, elder law, and special needs planning. You can join the conversation at any point. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the transfer of assets after death and different facets of estate planning here in Wisconsin. And you can call in with a question, share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Chantel Ringy is a partner at the Madison law firm Hill Glowacki. Let's go to Leisha now in Spring Green. Leisha, hi, go ahead.
Hi. My brother passed away unexpectedly in early 2021, and he didn't leave a will. And so I had to go through Dane County probate. I'm in Sauk County, and I probably went there at least four times. And depending on who I talked to, some of the people I talked to there were wonderful, and others were not helpful at all, and I had a terrible time. I got through about two-thirds of it, and I finally got to a point where I consulted with an attorney. I hired an attorney, and they told me that I didn't have to do a final accounting, and I showed up at Dane County Probate, and they said, oh, yes, you absolutely do. So I had to go back home and do all that, and he had quite a bit in his estate, and it was quite a process. And so I paid that attorney $600 for bad information, and it really bothered me a lot.
Leisha, thank you for sharing such a personal story. And Chantel, what do you make of a story like that and having to go through a process that is so unexpected and certainly not something that people understand?
Yes, it can be frustrating. It can be a long, drawn-out process, and certainly it's filled with various documents that the probate court requires you to submit. And I don't know that I've ever had two probates that are the same. There are occasions when you can avoid the accounting requirement, but you need all of the beneficiaries to waive that properly in writing. But, you know, there's the inventory that you need to file. There's generally a final accounting, and then they want to make sure that you've done all necessary income tax filings. So there's a certificate that they want to see from the state of Wisconsin that attests to that. You know, there is an inventory fee that you need to pay the probate court. It's relatively small, but it is based on the size of the estate. So as Leisha said, when you have a larger estate, as in her case, you're going to have a larger inventory fee, and all of those things sort of compound to make a stressful situation in which you might be trying to grieve the loss of your loved one even more difficult. Not that they're trying to make it difficult for you, but you will hear from the folks at the Dane County Probate Court repeatedly that they are not lawyers and they do not, they're not authorized to give legal advice. And so I'm sorry to hear that you did not receive good legal advice or legal advice that was relevant for your situation, Leisha. But it generally can be very helpful to make a phone call to an attorney to just find out what it is that you need to complete and maybe get some help completing those documents if you need assistance. I'm sorry to hear about that experience. Yes, if he had done a bit of planning, then you probably could have avoided that.
Let's bring in Richard now in Milwaukee. Richard, hi. Richard, are you there?
I'm sorry to hear about that experience.
Okay, Richard, I don't think is there anymore. Is wondering who decides jurisdiction for legal documents, especially if you've moved?
So in terms of which state has jurisdiction, the probate, if you need a probate, that will be in the county where you passed away. Mm-hmm. So we frequently receive phone calls from loved ones who reside outside of Wisconsin, but their family member or friend passed away in the state, and they're having to open a probate in Wisconsin. Sometimes if you have real estate in multiple states, that might mean you have multiple probates too, which, you know, that definitely makes it even more valuable to have planning done in advance to avoid that process. So it's the county where the decedent resided when they passed away that has jurisdiction of any probate. If they have documents drafted in another state, then generally the substantive provisions of those laws, that state's laws, apply, but the procedural laws of the state where you died apply in order to determine what procedures are required. So it can be kind of a mashup of the laws that apply in those situations.
let's bring a question about wills now. Jeremy in Bayfield. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. I got a question that's related to copies of wills. My sister and brother and I are named as beneficiaries in a will, but there is no, we can't find the original will, and so the attorney that drew up the will has a copy. And I'm just wondering if we need to get a lawyer besides him to make sure that that the copy of the will is validated, because there's a person that who's not named a sister of the deceased who may contest the whole thing.
Jeremy, thank you. Chantel, what about the validity of the will and copies?
So in Wisconsin, the probate courts will generally want to see the original of the will, and that's what they prefer to admit to probate. If that cannot be located, and certainly there are situations in which that's the case, maybe there was a fire or the individual moved numerous times or it just simply was displaced, then there are occasions when the probate court will accept a copy for admission to probate, but you have to convince them that it's valid and that the original wasn't revoked, because one manner of revoking a will is by destroying it. So who's to say that it wasn't destroyed, right? So usually, for instance, in Dane County, when we have situations where the original will cannot be located, certainly you want to make your best effort to find it, first of all, checking all of the sort of usual places. It sounds like you called the attorney who drafted the will. That's great. But when it can't be found in Dane County, if we submit an affidavit, you know, a sworn statement that it's that the copy is believed to be the will that was still in effect at the time of death, and that you've attempted to locate the original, unless there's a contest, then generally our probate court will accept that. But it sounds like maybe there's someone who perhaps would object. And it's in those cases where it becomes potentially more of a protracted argument about whether it is in fact the will that was in force at the time of death.
We only have a few seconds left. On wills, does Wisconsin recognize handwritten wills?
Wisconsin does. What our law wants to see, though, is that you have two disinterested witnesses who have watched the testator, testatrix, the person signing the will, sign and have also signed it themselves.
Chantel, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Chantel Ringy is a partner at the Madison law firm Hill Glowacki, with practice areas that involve estate planning, that involve elder law and special needs planning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.